9 a.m. on Monday, October 25th, 2021, and I am calling this meeting to order. Pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute ARS 38431.02, notice is hereby given to the members of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy and to the general public that the board will hold a meeting open to the public on what would be the next date, please?
November 22nd, Madam Chair.
November 22nd. Thank you, Ms. Cisneros. This meeting will be held digitally online. The meeting is open to the public. However, during the course of the meeting, the board, upon majority vote of a quorum of the members, may, when necessary, hold an executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 and A2, as indicated on the board's agenda. The executive session is not open to the public. Information concerning the board's agenda, including a copy of the agenda and any amendments, can be obtained at the board's office, through the board's website, or by contacting the board staff. The agenda is subject to change up to 24 hours prior to the meeting. Agenda and items are noted by number and letter for convenience and reference. The board may address the agenda items in order within the time frame indicated and may set over matters to a later time when necessary. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items except for matters that are set for a specific time. The chair of the Arizona Massage Therapy Board also reserves the right to change the order of the items published on this agenda, except once again for the public hearing set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of majority quorum, the board may go into an executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney and or review confidential information pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute ARS 38-431.03A2 and A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the board meeting room while the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by the board members will only take place in an open session. In accordance with open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly, and if the disorderly conduct continues, the person may be removed from the meeting. Ms. Cisneros, will you please call roll?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Ryder?
Present.
Vice Chair Lucchesi?
Present.
Ms. DeRoos?
Present.
Ms. Moon?
Present.
And Mr. Tapscott?
Present.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a full board today.
Thank you, Mrs. Narrows. It is determined we do have a quorum. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may call upon, may make an open call to the public during a public meeting, subject to a reasonable time frame, which is 3 minutes, place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. Do we have a call to the public? We have none, so we will move to the next agenda item. A declaration of conflicts of interest, ARS 38-503, After reviewing the board packet, do any of the board members have any conflicts of interest? If so, please let it be known now. And Seamus, I would, Mr. Monahan, I would like to call upon you for to ask if I need to recuse myself on the last case item with Mr. Roanhorse, because I have received some information, because I was the one that received information. Do I need to recuse myself from that?
That is up to you. You know, if you believe that you can be impartial and that information you received does not affect your ability to hear this case in an unbiased manner, then, you know, again, it's up to you whether you believe you need to recuse yourself.
Okay, thank you for that. I will not. All right. At this time, I would like to recognize and call upon the representatives of the Arizona Auditor General's Office to brief the board on the upcoming sunset audit of the board, which begins with staff on October 28th. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Jeremy Weber, and I am the audit manager from the Arizona Auditor General's Office that's assigned to this audit. I'd like to introduce my team briefly who are here on the call as well. Perhaps Robert, Jessica, and Dale, you can introduce yourselves.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dale Chapman, and I am the Performance Audit Director at the Auditor General's Office.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Holquist, and I am the Audit Senior for this audit.
Robert, are you there?
Oh, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. I had myself muted. I am a auditor one on the audit topic. Nice to meet you all.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, I have prepared a 15 to 20 minute presentation that provides an overview of our office, who we are, what we do, and how the sunset review and audit process will go. If it's all right, if you'd like to share my screen to provide that presentation.
I believe we might be able to do that. Tony, are we able to help Mr. Weber with his presentation?
Oh, I can do it.
Okay.
That works.
Thank you.
Let me pick the right screen. So hopefully everyone, let's see, can see my screen.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. So again, thank you for inviting us to attend your meeting. My name is Jeremy Weber. And like I said, I'll present an overview of our office and the sunset review process. Please feel free to stop me at any point to ask any questions that you may have. We'll also have time at the end of my presentation to go over any questions that you may have. Hold on a second. I need to adjust something on my screen real fast. Okay. Okay, so statute establishes the sunset review process and the requirement for the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy to undergo the sunset review. The audit is due to the legislature by no later than October 1st of 2022, so in a year from now, and we officially initiated the audit via email on October 7th of this year. We anticipate that our work will continue through the end of summer of next year. However, this is an estimated time frame, and it could change, and we'll keep you informed as the audit progresses. And then finally, the legislature will review the board for its continuation prior to July 1st of 2023, which is the board's current sunset date. During this presentation, we'll discuss three topics. First, who we are. Second, our authority and requirements for doing our work. And then third, what the audit process will look like. So first, who we are. We're a legislative agency that's overseen by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, or JLAC. This is a bipartisan committee that's composed of five senators and five representatives. JLAC's duties include approving our audit schedule, as well as appointing an auditor general, who currently is Lindsay Perry, and the Auditor General serves for a 5-year term. For context, most states have an agency that is similar to ours, a legislative oversight agency that reviews the finances or performance of executive branch agencies. And if you're familiar with the Federal Government Accountability Office, or the GAO, that agency is sort of the equivalent to what we do at the state level, but they do it at the federal level and work for Congress. In Arizona, our office serves as an independent source of information concerning state and local government, and it provides specific recommendations to improve their operations. And just for your information, our office has audit responsibility for state agencies, counties, universities, community college districts, and school districts. Our office conducts many types of audits. The one that we're doing for this agency, for the board, is called a performance audit. And that's an audit to assess whether a state agency is achieving its legislative objectives in an effective and efficient manner. These audits are often include what we call a sunset review, where we answer specific questions that are required by statute in order to help the legislature determine whether or not an agency should continue. And like I said, this is the type of audit that we'll be doing for the board, a performance audit and sunset review. It's also important to note, however, that our office performs many other types of audits, such as financial and compliance audits that provide information on the receipt and use of public monies, as well as financial investigations of allegations of public corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse. Do you have any questions so far on my presentation?
Not at this time for me. Any other board members? Thank you.
Okay, then I will continue. My slide is not, oh, there we go. Okay, next, we'll cover why we do performance audits and sunset reviews and what our authority is and what are the requirements for this work. So in 1978, the legislature established the sunset review process, which is a systematic evaluation of state agencies and programs to determine if the merits of the agency or program justify its continuation rather than its termination. And statute requires that most agencies undergo a sunset review at least once every 8 to 10 years. Our sunset reviews always include one or more performance audits, like I mentioned earlier. And again, these focus on whether an agency is performing key statutory objectives effectively, efficiently, or in compliance with requirements. In addition to the performance audit, we also research and report answers to 12 statutory sunset factor questions. These include questions about the objective and purpose of the agency, the extent to which it serves the interests of the entire state, and whether termination of the agency would significantly harm the public's health, safety, or welfare. And at the start of an audit, we ask all agencies to provide us with a written response to each one of these factors. To help with that process, we had previously provided the prior board members and the executive director with a copy of our sunset factor handout. This handout provides directions to help you in developing your sunset factor response. It doesn't need to be a formal response because we'll not publish it, but we use it to help guide the work that we do and to gain an understanding of the board's activities and functions. We generally ask agencies for their response within a month after we officially start the audit, and we'll further discuss this request with the executive director when we meet with him on this Thursday for an entrance conference. Finally, our audit work is approved in advance by JLAC. In 2020, JLAC approved the two-year audit cycle for audits that are due in 2022 and in 2023. Again, audits are generally due by October 1st of the year preceding an agency's termination date, and we cannot conduct any audit work without specific authority from the legislature. Finally, our office does not do all of the performance audits or sunset reviews that are listed in statute. There are more agencies, boards, and commissions that are up for their annual sunset review or up for sunset review each year than our office can take on. So sometimes a committee of reference staff will conduct the sunset review rather than our office. Any questions at this time?
None at this time, Mr. Weber, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then I will proceed into the last portion of our meeting or of our presentation, which is what the audit process looks like. So for regulatory agencies like yours, we typically focus our review on a few mission critical areas. These include looking at the licensing process. For example, we'll look at whether licenses were issued to qualified applicants and within the required timeframes that are spelled out in the administrative code. We'll also look at the complaints process. For example, we'll assess whether complaints are opened, investigated, and adjudicated appropriately, and whether they were handled and resolved in a timely manner. In addition, we'll look at various topics related to public information, such as whether the board's website gives complete and accurate information that is required by statute about the regulated professionals, and whether the board complies with open meeting law requirements in its public meetings. We'll also look at whether the board appropriately sought public input during any recent rulemaking activity. In addition, we'll look at the fee process. So for example, we'll consider whether the board has assessed its direct and indirect costs periodically to establish fees that are based on its costs and of licensure and of regulation. And then finally, we'll look at the board's policies and procedures around how it handles conflicts of interest, including whether the board complies with statutory requirements and whether those policies and procedures are aligned with recommended practices. We may look at other areas as well during our audit, depending on if there's other important functions that we identify a need for us to review as well. To review these areas, we perform various activities that help us understand and then verify how the agency conducts its work. So this slide lists some examples of the type of work that we'll do. These can include observing staff and board meetings, reviewing files to verify that information on the website is accurate or that processes that we reviewed were followed. We'll interview staff, we'll review agency documents such as policies and procedures, and we may request other types of records, including accounting records, management reports, or contracts as needed. We also consider any previous audit work that may have been done of the board. In addition, we'll look for criteria on how things should be done. This could include any statutory requirements or literature and best practices. We also have our own legal counsel on staff to help us ensure that we accurately interpret statute and rule requirements, but we may also talk with your legal counsel about guidance that you have, maybe you've received regarding specific statutory requirements. In addition, we also obtain information from other states to identify common practices and to help us respond to several of the Sunset Factor questions, which ask for comparative state information. We thought it would be worthwhile to spend a little more time on the type of evidence that we look for so that you know what to expect when we make requests for information or for evidence. Our preference will always be to observe processes directly or to review documents or other physical items. We also request a lot of documentary evidence. For example, if we interview staff around a process such as how licenses are processed, we'll frequently ask for the written policies and procedures as supporting documentation to corroborate how staff described the process working. We often look for written processes because we're interested in long-term performance and sustainability at an agency. For example, if a person leaves employment with the agency and no one else was performing one of their tasks, is there written documentation that will describe what it was they did and how they did it so that the next staff person can pick up that function? Also, we prefer electronic documents whenever possible. And so we may also ask for electronic data, such as information that the agency keeps in spreadsheets or databases that are used to perform the agency's functions. We have found that during audits, it's most efficient if the individuals that we interview can send us the documents directly. Sometimes with a large agency, we have an audit liaison who serves as sort of a main point of contact. But when our requests for documents are funneled through a single person, that person can sometimes become overwhelmed by all the information that we're asking for, and it can slow down the process. So it's helpful to us when we can just directly ask the people who have the information we need for that information. As I mentioned before, one of the types of work we do is interviews. And so we plan to hold a lot of interviews, especially initially as we begin the audit work. We gather a lot of information through interviews, and for this type of information, we prefer to interview people in a setting where they can speak freely. Therefore, although we may request the executive director's input on the staff that we should be interviewing for the different areas that we'll look at, we prefer to set up these interviews directly ourselves, and have only the people that we request to attend the interview. And we will meet with the executive director frequently during the audit to share what we're learning and to give him and you all an opportunity to provide input to ensure that we have the best information. During an audit, there may be some work that requires additional technical expertise. And to help us with this work, we may bring in other staff from our office. So for example, we sometimes include staff with financial audit experience to complete internal control reviews that look at assets and financial transactions and any cash handling that may occur at the board, and as well as to develop financial tables for our reports. We also work with our IT auditors to review any IT operations, controls, and security as needed as well. Statute provides us with broad access to records to conduct our work, and we have access to all agency records, and also statute allows us to attend governing bodies' executive session meetings. Because we know that agencies have sensitive data, we safeguard any data, particularly any confidential data that is provided to us. We keep it secure by providing means for you to transmit that data to us securely. And within our own office, we restrict access to that data to only the audit team members. Also, our audit working papers and files are considered confidential and are not subject to public records disclosure. Because we have authority to access records and we have our own internal IT security policies, we typically don't sign any individual IT policies that agencies may have in place at their own agencies. And we had previously provided a handout to the executive director that offers more details about this area, including the specific statutory citations, but I can provide that again as if needed. Also, we conduct our audit work in phases. The early phase of the audit is designed to help us gain an understanding of the board and then to determine the areas for further audit work. During this phase, we'll conduct many interviews with your staff. We'll review statute and rules and other documents. The second phase is called fieldwork, and that's where we conduct more focused review on the areas that we identified for our test works. So that includes, like I mentioned before, the licensing process, the complaint handling process, and some of those other areas. And during that phase, we'll collect information and evidence that will be used to help us develop and document any potential findings and recommendations for the report. And we usually will work with your staff to request and obtain more specific documentation during this phase as we conduct that more in-depth review and work. And then during our final phase, report writing and quality control, we will draft the audit report and go through an extensive quality control review process to ensure that we have appropriate and sufficient evidence. Throughout the audit process, we hope that this is a very collaborative process, and we will work with your staff to share what we are doing and finding. We'd like to operate on a no surprises approach so that when you get that first draft of the report, it doesn't have any surprises in it. And so sharing information with you and hearing your perspective on the potential issues that we're finding is really critical to our audit process and to our quality control process. And in red on this slide, I have added the meetings that we plan to hold with your staff throughout each stage of the audit. So typically at the beginning of the audit, we hold what we call an entrance conference. This is the meeting that we have scheduled with the executive director for this Thursday. That meeting will go over any questions that he or staff may have about the audit process. We'll also conduct updates with your staff generally monthly throughout the process. So typically we have what we call audit updates, and we'll meet with staff at least monthly to go over the things that we're finding and to gain their perspective to make sure that we have a complete understanding and haven't missed anything. And then we'll meet again with your staff at the end of fieldwork to go over any potential findings or recommendations that we anticipate including in the report. Now, during the audit, we can also update the board on the progress that we're making. Those meetings would need to be held though in executive session of your board meetings, because our work is again considered confidential, and anything that we're finding and that we would want to share with you would be confidential as well. And then finally, before our audit report is published, we submit a draft of the report for the board and staff to review and comment on. We view that you as an important part of our quality assurance process. And the team will hold what we call a draft exit meeting with you to discuss any comments or concerns that you have regarding the accuracy of the information that is presented to you in that draft report. You should also be aware that after our report is published, the legislature is required to hold a committee of reference hearing in the House and in the Senate, or possibly through a joint House and Senate meeting. At this hearing, we will present any information from our report, and you will also be given an opportunity to present information and answer any questions that legislative members may have. The committee will then make a recommendation on whether to continue the agency, and if so, for how long, and this recommendation goes to the full legislature for a vote. The hearings typically occur in the fall. So like I mentioned before, we have an October 1st due date of next year. So any hearing on the board's continuation would be held either that fall or in the early part of 2023, no later than the third week in January. And prior to the hearing, you'll be contacted by the committee and their staff and will be asked to respond to some specific statutory questions that are similar to the sunset factor questions that we talked about earlier. And your response to those questions goes directly to the committee. We're not involved in that process. And then finally, after the report is issued, we are required to follow up on your efforts to implement any recommendations that were in the report. JLAC requires that these follow-ups occur at 6 months and 18 months after a report is published. However, we sometimes will continue to do that follow-up process after 18 months if some of the recommendations are still in the process of being implemented. And the follow-up process generally includes the same type of work that we perform during an audit. This can include reviewing documents, conducting observations or interviews, and looking at files. Now, that concludes my presentation, and I've included here a link to our website, which has a link to all of our past reports. If you're interested, I suggest that you read a few performance audits that we've done recently to get an idea of what your audit may look like and what types of findings we've had at other regulatory agencies. Some of our recent audits of regulatory agencies include the Arizona State Board of Nursing, the Board of Barbers, and the Board of Dispensing Opticians. And then finally, are there any questions?
I have no questions, Mr. Weber. Your presentation was very informative. Do any board members or staff have any questions for Mr. Weber? Okay. Thank you so much for your presentation, Mr. Weber.
Thank you for the invitation, for the opportunity to present to the board. We look forward to working with you as we carry out the audit.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Next on our agenda, I will be presenting a briefing of the FSMTB annual conference. I attended this a couple of weeks ago. It was the 16th annual meeting of the Federation of the State Massage Therapy Boards, or fondly known as FSMTB. And it was conducted online October 8th, 2021. With 38 member boards and agencies that were represented. The membership entertained amendments to the bylaws that included updated technical language in the bylaws and a resolution proposed by the Oregon State Board of Massage Therapists. This resolution included that the FSMTB will develop and offer a virtual training webinar program for member boards based on the trainings provided by the by the FSMTB Council. The FSMTB will also offer smaller annual updates to the training based on changing national professional, legislative, and legal landscape. Elections were held for three positions on the FSMTB Board of Directors and three positions on the 2022 Nominating Committee. The following members were elected to serve a three-year term on the Board of Directors: Mr. Craig Knowles, Ms. Victoria Drago, and Mr. Fawad Aranajad. Hope I didn't mangle that name too much. I apologize. And the following members were also elected to serve a one-year term on the 2022 Nominating Committee: Ms. Carla Hedke, Kimberly Hodge, and Megan Maxey. All of these members are on a state board and the Board of Directors has been updated on the website. Officers were elected at the Board of Directors meeting following the 2021 FSMTB annual meeting. Craig Knowles, Georgia Board of the Massage Therapy, was elected to serve as president. Charlene Russell of Mississippi was elected to serve as vice president. And Sandy Anderson, Nevada State Board of Massage Therapy, was elected to serve as treasurer. The most current information of the FSMTB Board of Directors can be found on the website along with their annual report. And I would encourage all of the board members, as well as all LMTs in the public meeting, to become familiar with the FSMTB's REACH program that offers continuing education courses that support required learning to sustain therapist competency and desired professional development. Are there any questions on that annual conference? Very good. Next up, we are going to be reviewing and discussing possible actions on whether to open a complaint on the following matters. Ms. Cisneros, could you report on case, investigative case, 22-115, Jonathan Riggs?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. According to a news article published on August 18th of this year, the respondent was arrested by the Scottsdale PD in connection with a sexual assault allegation reported by a female client at a massage business. The client reported to the Scottsdale PD that while laying face up on the massage table, she could feel the respondent making inappropriate movements with his pelvic area near the left side of her face, that he continued to move his hands toward her pelvic area despite her growing discomfort, and that the respondent touched her breast and vagina during the massage. The client contacted the manager after leaving, filed a police report, and Mr. Riggs, according to the news article, Mr. Riggs initially denied touching the client inappropriately and later changed his story and told the police that he had inappropriately touched the client. The respondent was arrested and booked on suspicion of one count sexual assault and two counts of sexual abuse. That completes my presentation, and the board's investigator is present if you have any questions.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Cisneros. Mr. Elson, do you have any updates for this report?
Well, no, there is no updates.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. So at this time, I would like to ask the board members if there is a motion to open a complaint against Mr. Jonathan Riggs. I would like to move that we open a investigative case against Jonathan Riggs. Do I have a second?
I would like to second the motion to open.
Thank you. I'm sorry, was that Member DeRoos that seconded the motion?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, do we need to do a vote, Ms. Cisneros?
Yes, Madam Chair. Would you like a roll call vote for that one?
Yes, I would. Please. Thank you.
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchesi?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimously.
It has been moved that we will be opening a complaint case against Mr. Jonathan Riggs. Agenda number 10, discussion and possible action. Upon a vote of a majority of quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A. 2 and A3 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by law, and to potentially ask for any legal advice. We have a formal interview for James Saylor, case number 21-163. And Mr. Elson, would you be available to advise the, or update the board on this, give a summary to the board of this case?
Sure. The board received information that Mr. Saylor was inappropriate touching a client while giving a massage, including her pelvic, pubic, breasts, and anus area while working at Gallery Sports Club in Marianna.
Thank you. Ms. Cisneros, do you have any other information on this case?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I do not believe, and we can confirm, but I do not believe that Mr. Saylor is on the call today.
Okay.
I believe that he declined the formal interview. So because he declined the formal interview, we can't go forward with that interview today. So the board can offer some kind of consent agreement, and if not signed, move the matter to formal hearing. You can dismiss the matter, or you can continue the formal interview. But considering that he did not accept the invitation, that would probably not be your best option.
Board members, do we have a motion for any of these and Mr. Monahan? I would like to move to a formal hearing for Mr. Okay. Saylor.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General again. Let me help you clarify that motion. Yes. So you want to move matter 21-163 in the matter of James Saylor to formal hearing for the purposes of possible revocation of license. And my question to you, is that based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations as they are stated in the board's investigatory report?
That is correct, Mr. Monahan. Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have a second for that motion?
It's Mariah Moon, public member. I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Do we need a roll call vote, Ms. Cisneros?
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you. So it has been moved that we will be having a formal hearing for Mr. James Taylor in the case of 21-163 for a future meeting. Okay. Next on our agenda is an investigative review for Mr. Alfaro Rogers. Elson, can you please give the public a
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, you're breaking up. I didn't catch that last part.
I apologize. I would like, we're doing an investigative review on Mr. Alfonso Rogers. And if Mr. Elson or Mrs. Narrows, if you could give the board and the public a brief summary of this case.
You want to do it, Andrea?
I have something prepared, but that's up to you, David.
Go ahead. This is one of Andrew's cases.
Absolutely. Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the board, on July 20th of this year, the board received a complaint from client DV regarding a massage that she underwent on July 17th by the respondent. While lying face up, the respondent pulled the draping below the client's breasts and started massaging her breasts and nipples without oral or written permission. The respondent moved on to massage DV's shoulders while leaving her breasts exposed. Respondent returned to massaging DV's breasts, at which point she terminated the session and left. DV reported that she felt violated and that it will be a long time before she uses a male therapist. DV reported the incident to the manager of the establishment, to the Chandler PD, and also to the board. The respondent was terminated from employment, and that concludes my presentation, and Mr. Elson's available if the board has any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Smeros. Mr. Elson, do you have anything to add to that report?
There's no updates other than the fact that the police report from Chandler PD that's listed has been reviewed in the report. We have not received that police report yet. I don't know why it's on there as reviewed, but we haven't received it.
Okay. Mr. Monahan, can you please advise the board on our options for action regarding this case?
Yes. Can we just clarify with Investigator Elson, have we received any correspondence or has the respondent participated at all?
Give me just a second. No, we haven't received any. We haven't received his investigative questionnaire back, and I haven't spoke to him. Like I said earlier, this was one of the former investigator's cases, but there's no record in his file that he responded to the investigative questionnaire.
Okay. So it would be appropriate, since we're at the investigative review, to first query the pool of people who are at the meeting to make sure that the respondent is not there, and also to check and see if the complainant is there as well. And if they are, we should give them each a turn to speak about the matter. And the board can ask them questions one at a time.
Okay. Do we have an Alfonso Rogers on the video conference today? And do we have a complainant on the video conference today regarding the allegations of Alfonso Rogers?
And just to reiterate, whenever we are discussing the complainant or the victim, we always use the initials. Just to remind everybody.
Thank you.
Do we have those initials?
DV, I believe. Is that correct, Mrs. Smeros? DV?
D as in David, V as in Victor.
Thank you.
That's correct.
And DV is not on the call as well?
No.
Okay. Next step, Mr. Monahan, since neither are present.
You have all of your, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, you have all of your non-disciplinary options available to you right now: continuing education, letter of reprimand, excuse me, letter, advisory letter. You could offer a consent agreement pursuant to whatever terms you want in that consent agreement within our statutes. You could move this matter to a formal interview based on the potential allegations and potential violations of law in the investigatory report, and see if the individual will show up for an investigative, for a formal interview. Or, you know, if you believe that the actions are egregious enough, you can move this matter straight to a formal hearing based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations in the investigative report.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Monahan. Mm-hmm. Do we have any motions from any board members?
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Tapscott.
I apologize. I move that we move this to a formal hearing.
Do we have a second?
And again, is that based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations as they are contained in the board's investigatory report?
Yes. To clarify, these are based on the facts that are presented here in the report. They're of enough concern to want to move this to a formal hearing.
Thank you.
This is Mariah, the public member. I'll second that. Motion.
Mrs. Narrows, you had your hand up. Did you want to add something?
No, Madam Chair. I apologize. That was an accident.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Could we do a vote on this motion, Mrs. Narrows?
Absolutely. Yes, Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Aye.
And Madam Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
It has been moved that we will be doing a formal hearing at a future date for the case of Mr. Rogers. Mr. Alfonso Rogers. Thank you. Next on the agenda, Mr. Elson, I believe the case 21-110 has been moved to November. Is that correct, Stephen Falstich?
Well, you would have to move to continue it to continue to the next board meeting to allow the complainant to be present. She wants to be present, but she was unable to make it to this meeting.
Understood. Thank you so much. I would like to move that we move that case to the next board meeting in November for Stephen Falstich, case 21-110.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. And Mrs. Narrows, could we do a roll call vote with that?
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you. So it has been moved that we will be hearing the case of Stephen Falstich 21-110 at the next board meeting, November 22nd. Thank you. Next on our agenda, board review, discussion, and possible action relating to the acceptance of proposed consent agreement for voluntary surrender of license or other action to be taken by the board deemed necessary on the following case. Mr. Thomas Roanhorse, 22-125. Mr. Elson, can you give us some details on this case, and then I will also chime in when you're done.
Okay. Mr. Roanhorse applied for a license with the massage board on, let me pull up his case real quick.
Madam Chair, for the record, I just want to clarify that the case number in this matter is 22-123, not 125.
Thank you for that clarification, Mrs. Narrows.
Absolutely. And I have, David, I don't know if it'll help, but I do have a brief summary if you would like.
No, I've got his case number. This is actually case number. What did you say it was, Andrea?
According to the agenda that I have in front of me, it's 22-123.
It's 125. That's an old
It is 125. Okay. Yep. Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
So on this case, on October 19th, 2021, we received respondent was issued license number MT28058 and had not yet graduated from school, leading us to believe that he had falsified his application for licensure. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation. On January 12th, respondent applied for his initial licensure, made the following entries on his application for licensure. Question 9 says, have you graduated from a board-recognized school located in Arizona? Respondent marked yes. When, in fact, as of October 22nd, 2001, respondent has still failed to graduate. Question eight, respondent indicated that he had 700 hours of classroom and clinical instruction and completed on July 19th, when in fact he is still yet to complete the course. So based on this information and respondent's own admissions that he did falsify his application for licensure.
Thank you for that update. I would like to also mention that it was originally brought to my attention by the direct supervisor of Mr. Roanhorse, that it was Mr. Roanhorse who had reported that he received a license and questioned why he had received a license when he had not yet completed the program.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. This situation is a little bit different. I do believe that I saw Mr. Roanhorse pop into the meeting. If the board would like to discuss the matter with him, I believe that he's available.
Yes, I did see his name on there as well. Mr. Roanhorse, if you are available and feel comfortable, would you like to unmute yourself? And board members, if you have any questions for Mr. Roanhorse regarding this, please go ahead and ask.
Hello, I'm here. This is Dustin Roanhorse. I just want to say thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Tapscott, you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Roanhorse. So I just want to make sure I have the facts clear. Did you operate without having a license? Did you perform massage and get paid for it without having a license?
No, I have not.
Okay.
And are there any other questions? Ms. Cisneros.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify whether or not the respondent was represented by legal counsel today.
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Moon.
Mariah Moon, public member. Thomas, I'm curious, are you confirming that you did or did not graduate from the program?
No, I'm almost there. I just haven't graduated yet. I just filled out the application thinking that it would come at the end whenever I did the transcript and everything. So it was my fault. I just I had some miscommunication that I just filled it out.
Do you mind expanding and explaining what happened?
Yeah, of course. They told us to send in the fingerprints early, so I assumed that they meant the application and the fingerprints. So when it came, I just estimated a date to when I'd be finished, and then it came, so I contacted the school and told them I received it, and then it was just a miscommunication on my part. I had no ill intent or intention to deceive anybody. Haven't practiced or anything. The school saw my license as soon as I got it, and I communicated with them from the very beginning. But it was just a misunderstanding on my part.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board? Mr. Tapscott, do you have another question?
I do. So I've read the report really clearly, but I just want to make sure I really understand here. So the board issued you a license even though we hadn't received your transcripts yet, correct?
Correct, yeah. And I brought them with me as well to surrender them to the school or whoever needed them.
And you attest that you did not attempt to work under that license or anything. You just got issued it, and it was... And you believe, since you'd sent in your fingerprints, that you were just sending the rest of the application in preparation for graduation?
Correct, yes. And I have not used it or had any intent to.
And Ms. Moon, do you have your hand up again as well?
That's an old hand. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Roanhorse? Okay. Mr. Attorney General, Mr. Monahan, could you inform the board of the options here regarding Mr. Roanhorse?
Yes, would you please indulge me and make a motion to move into executive session to discuss this matter quickly?
Yes, absolutely. I move Thank that you. Board go into an executive session to discuss the case of Mr. Thomas Roanhorst.
Madam Chair. And that's
for legal advice, correct?
For legal advice.
Before everybody leaves, you're going to be receiving a link from me, which will be the link for the next place you're going, and then you'll close the link that you're at now at this meeting. So stand by for the link, please.
Thank you, Mr. Augerton.
Madam Chair, in the meantime, before any of the board members leave, we need to have a seconder to the motion and a vote. I believe we just lost Ms. Moon, if we can get her back on.
Do we have a second for that motion?
This is Chairperson Tapscott. I second that motion.
Thank you.
And this could be a voice vote, Madam Chair.
Yes, let's do a voice vote on this motion.
Yes, if you want to ask members if they vote in favor of the motion to indicate by saying aye.
Thank you. All in favor of this motion, please say aye. Ms. Lucchese?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Mr. Tapscott?
Aye.
And I believe you had said that.
That's okay. We have a quorum, so we're all right.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, that should be fine. Thank you.
It is moved that we are moving into an executive session. Are all of our board members back from the executive session? Mrs. Narrows, could we do a quick roll call before we proceed?
Absolutely. No. Mr. Tapscott?
Here.
Ms. Moon?
Here.
Ms. DeRoost?
Present.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Here.
And then Chair Ryder.
Here.
Thank you. We have a full board.
In the matter of Mr. Thomas Roanhorst, would any board members like to discuss in public? Go ahead, Mr. Tapscott.
Thank you very much. I want to make some commentary because I oversee a massage school, and so have many students that submit massage applications. And they do something fairly similar to what Mr. Roanhorst did here. However, our graduation dates are accurate because of the way the college is run. If you don't graduate by that date, you don't graduate. But the point is, I can understand the concept of trying to get your paperwork in early because it's often a two-month waiting period to get your license. I think we all need to take into consideration that this gentleman did not attempt to operate. We have no reason to believe he attempted to operate with that license, which I think is a key factor here that we all need to take into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tapscott. Ms. DeRoost?
Yeah, I think as I was reviewing this, and the thing that I had the biggest question about before was just, did he try to practice with it? That would make the biggest difference or a big difference to me. And so I agree with you that the fact that he didn't try to practice with the license made a difference for me as well.
Ms. Moon.
My comment, I agree with what the other two board members are saying, and I would like to propose a recommendation to make a motion to void the license with all of the information that we've received today, including his surrendering of the license, that maybe it was bad practice, but of filling out the application, but I think the best remedy would be just to void the license.
And is that voiding the license, are you basing that on the fact that he did not meet the qualifications for licensure when it was issued?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have a second for that motion?
Yes, I second that motion.
Thank you. Mrs. Narrows, would you like to do a vote? And unmute?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you, Mrs. Narrows. So it has been moved by the board to consider the license of Mr. Thomas Roanhorse void and the issuance in error as the applicant did not meet the requirements for licensure. The license will be voided and the applicant can reapply after finishing his requirements. The board also directs the staff to put a note in the respondent's record to be reviewed when he does eventually reapply for his license. Okay. Next on our agenda, the Executive Director's Report. I'm going to hand this over to you, Mr. Auberton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I've got two issues before you that we need to review and discuss. The first is changes that have been made in licensing by the board since the start of the COVID pandemic. In 2020, just to review with a brief history, the governor gave the authority for the actual waiver of fees, which was used by the board for licensees who were going through renewals. And that began in 2020 with March 1st, and then it ended on September the 30th, and the board actually formally, after voting on it, ended it on December 30th of 2020. Now, at that same time in 2020, again, using the authority of the governor's executive order, the board approved a waiver of the required 24 hours of continuing education. And as you sit here this morning, that waiver continues. Now, ordinarily, as you know, we're not going through, certainly, which has been kind of an unprecedented period in state regulation. 24 hours are routinely provided by each licensee with every biennial renewal every 24 months. So basically, it's a responsibility of 1 hour per month for continuing education. And then the proof of that completion is submitted at the time of the license renewal request application. And again, that's currently waived. This year, the governor has issued Executive Order 2021-2021-16, largely removing a lot of the exemptions that had been permitted after the original declaration of the COVID pandemic. And that was last year in 2020, and that executive order was 2020-07, which empowered the Arizona Department of Health Services to issue guidelines, which included state regulatory board processes. My proposal, but it's really up to the board what your thoughts are on this. Anyone who is within a short period of time for a renewal will be obligated to provide those 24 hours and proof of the 24 hours as soon as the waiver ends. And what I've proposed to the board today is March the 1st or February the 28th would be the last day of the waiver. The requirement for CE hours would resume March the 1st, 2022. Now, by doing that, a couple of things could be accomplished. Number one, every Arizona state licensee would have an equal access to the waiver of the 24 hours and any costs that would have been incurred during this pandemic period. So nobody would be left out from that allowance. With the fee waiver last year, it really only benefited 6 months under the executive order, and by the time we implemented it, 9 months of fee waiver, which did not include the full licensure, and we received a significant amount of email correspondence when that deadline passed. The other thing is that I'm suggesting in this language that's before you this morning that the current requirement that 12 hours be done by classroom only and 12 hours can be done online be adjusted to the full 24 hours returning on March the 1st, but allow the waiver of those hours to be done online until you have a chance to review the situation with the pandemic and the industry in 2022. Now, you're open to do anything you want. Those are just my suggestions to try to partner with the licensees, all of whom have been through an extraordinary experience as business people, and all of whom, you know, we kind of forget now in 2021 what it was like in 2020 when there was no information and no vaccine. The board does not statutorily govern the facilities. And many of the licensees were looking for a specific instruction that we had to wait until DHS provided that to them. So it has been a challenging period for the licensees and their relationship with the regulatory process. So those are some of the conditions that I would offer for background for your review today. Madam Chair, you have a question?
I do, and I didn't want to interrupt anybody. So I want to, I think that what you're proposing is a good idea, with March 1st being the date to get those CEs back in order. As far as the 24 hours of the industry continuing education being an option to have them all online, I would also like to add that there are many CE providers that are providing live webinar, which can count as live CEs. So depending on, you know, what happens in this discussion too, I think that the 12 CEs of live webinar could suffice for the live CE courses that were originally required versus having all 24 online. I think there is definitely some benefit to interacting with the instructors and the other and classmates in a live setting, whether it be in a classroom or in a virtual classroom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing that I need to make the board aware of is you currently have the ability, the board is authorized to give 3 hours of CE education to all licensees who actually attend one of your meetings. And that is in a 24-hour cycle or a biennial cycle. I would shamelessly lobby you to consider at a later date making that 3 hours per year, because not only does it provide an intimate look at the regulatory process that governs the industry, but it would be free of charge. So 1/4 of their entire CE obligation could be underwritten basically by participating as an observer at one board meeting per year. So I just wanted to, again, make that suggestion. Madam Chair, you have a question again.
Not really a question, more of a comment, because I get excited about board meetings, apparently. So I think it would be really amazing to have the 3 hours per year advantage for all LMTs to attend the board meetings, because I think more LMTs do need to get involved and become aware of what's happening in their industry. And a lot of that can be discovered when attending the board meeting. So I think it's a wonderful idea. Ms. Moon, you have your hand up.
I'm wondering if we can summarize. I'm getting a little lost in translation of what we're looking at as far as options.
Sure, Madam Chair, Board Member Moon. Basically, the waiver needs to end. The board is being asked to pick a date for the end of the waiver. We have to be considerate of the fact that when the waiver has an end date, people could be potentially facing 24 hours requirement for classes before they can renew their license. And if you made it October 31st, they would need 24 hours, which would be practically impossible in the days remaining this month. So we proposed March the 1st of next year, with notification beginning immediately after the board discussion and decision on the website and placed on the forms. And then also from a fairness standpoint, since everyone did not get the license renewal fees waived, everybody would whose license at least get the 24 hours waived. So in 30 seconds or less, staff is proposing March 1st, 2022, as the return of the requirement for 24 hours of CE.
Thank you. And just for my understanding, what is the benchmark of March 2022? Why are we suddenly
Madam Chair, Board Member Moon, March the 1st would be 2 years, so it provides sufficient advance time for people to get their CEs now. You'd have November, December, and 3 months next year to do 24 hours, and people before that would not be faced with that requirement. And then secondarily, it's an inclusive opportunity, so every licensee is treated equally.
Thank you.
Do any other board members have questions for Mr. Augerton? Any clarification needed? All right. Mr. Augerton, do you have anything else that you would like to add?
No, ma'am.
All right. And at this time for this particular subject, Mr. Monahan,
Would this require a motion from the board?
Yes, it would.
Okay. Ms. Moon, please go ahead.
Mariah Moon, public member. I would like to make a motion to extend the waiver to the date of, correct me if I'm wrong, March 1st of 2022.
We have a second. Mr. Tapscott?
I second that motion.
Thank you. Ms. Cisneros, would you like to do a vote?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchesi?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
So it is. It has been moved that the waiver of continuing education requirements will be extended to March 1st of 2022. And at that time, the requirements will continue to be 24 hours of continuing education for all licensed massage therapists in the state of Arizona. I do want to ask, are we putting any stipulations on the classroom as far as it being online? Are these all 24 hours online? Is it back to the 12 hours of live hours and 12 online? Does that make sense to everybody?
Madam Chair, unless you do something in addition to the motion you've just passed, as of March the 1st next year, it goes back to 12 hours class, 12 hours online.
Okay. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes, I like the executive director's recommendation to allow it to all be online after March 1st so that we could review the situation at that time.
Okay.
I think it makes sense to phase this back in. I think that's what we're trying to do here.
I see. Would you like to make a motion for that?
I would like, thank you, Ms. Ryder. I would like to make a motion that as of March 1st, when we require CEUs again, we allow them to all be online at that time.
Mr. Roost.
I'd like to second that motion that the hours are all online.
And Mrs. Narrows, would you like to do a vote?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon?
Aye.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchesi?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Okay. So it is moved that upon the continuation of the CE hours beginning on March 1st of 2022, that all of those hours can be online. So all 24 hours can be online.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you let me move to the next item?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Overton.
Okay. In your packet, you see a copy of the letter which the board received on September the 23rd, 2021. And hold on just one second. I bumped a button and lost you all. That letter is in your packet today because the last board received a copy of it but was not here to discuss it. So this is the first time it's being presented to the new board. The issue is schools in Arizona that are accredited in addition to being licensed by the post-secondary board. And I believe in your packet you have a copy, or I can give you the statutory number that we're using for this procedure. It's Title 32-4228, and we did consult with the Attorney General's office. So basically, the current policy of the board is that for schools that are licensed but not nationally accredited, the board will need an MBLEX or NCB certification prior to state licensing. And this is not up for action today, but for preliminary presentation to the board and discussion. And that's all I have, Madam Chair, on that issue.
Madam Chair, board members, if you would like to step into executive session for a couple minutes, I could provide you some background and some advice on how we got to this point. But that's up to you.
I would be open to that. I would like to move that we go into an executive session regarding this letter received by the Arizona Massage Therapy Board. Yes, Mr. Tapscott?
I second that motion.
Madam Chair, just clarify, is that for the board to receive legal advice?
Yes, to receive legal advice on this letter and clarification.
Thank you. And we can proceed with the vote if you'd like.
Yes.
Looks like we just lost one member.
They were excited to go into executive.
Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. Moon is absent for this vote. Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lucchese?
Yes.
And Chair Ryder?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion passes.
All right, board members, we will go into executive session. Mr. Augerton will use the same link that we used previously.
Yes, please, Madam Chair. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, it is 10:45. Mrs. Nero, you do a roll call for us. Please make sure we have all of our board members back from executive session.
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
Here.
Ms. Moon?
Here.
Ms. DeRoost?
Present.
And Vice Chair Lucchese? Oh, I see she just joined. Madam Vice Chair?
Here.
Yes.
Thank you. And
can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, we have a full board.
Thank you. It is 10:46 and we are back from executive session. I'd like to give the board members an opportunity to discuss the letter that has been presented by Mr. Augerton regarding Allied Healthcare Institute. Would somebody like to begin? If anyone. Yes, Ms. Moon.
Just a comment. I wanted to see if any of the educators had any insight to share regarding the topic.
Mr. Tapscott?
I don't know if I have a great deal of insight. I've generally always liked the current policy for a couple of reasons, but this is coming from a community college that's accredited at a very high level. And my feelings are, if the school is accredited, then we are saying that they are qualified to teach, and we trust the quality of their graduates, and therefore no other test is required. And that's always made a lot of sense to me. And if a school's not accredited, then we have reason to check up on the quality of their graduates. And so a national test makes sense in those situations. And the reason I've really liked our current setup too is working here at the community college, we work with a lot of disenfranchised individuals. And we do a very good job educating them, but asking them to take the MBLEX would be a real hardship for some of them. It's a very difficult test, and that is not to suggest that we rubber stamp people here, because we do not. Our accreditation would not allow us to do that. But it's to suggest that some of our students are not good test takers, for example, and having them take the MBLEX would actually make it very hard for them to get employed. And I think the job here is to employ safe massage therapists, and we've got a proven track record doing that. So I've always liked our current statutes around this, because it seems like fully accredited schools produce good graduates, in my opinion.
I actually agree with you wholeheartedly, Mr. Tapscott. As an educator previously at Cortiva Institute, we also had we were accredited nationally by the U.S. Direct Department of Education, we had very good outcomes. But I believe that in the case of massage therapists, I mean, it is a career that a lot of people make the choice to do because they want to help people, not because they're a good test taker.
And so I think that sometimes requiring an MBLEX test or exam in areas where it may not be needed, when they've had a quality education that has already been vetted by the Department of Education, I think that qualifies as not for those students to have to take it. So I do agree with you on that. Any other board members want to chime in on that? Did that help answer your question, Ms. Moon?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Ogerton, do you have anything to add to the discussion?
Madam Chair, no. I concluded that section of the agenda, but thank you.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure. What I would like to do is put this on the agenda for a future date, if it pleases the board staff. I think that, and Mr. Ronahan, if you could direct us a little bit on if there is any action to be taken at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Today, it was just on for review and discussion so that you could have a chance to look at it and digest it, and we can put it on at a later date for you to take action if you'd like to.
Yes, thank you very much. I would like to move that we do add that to a future agenda item, time permitting in the future meetings. So perhaps in November, if November's not too busy with the agenda.
And Madam Chair, if I may, a motion isn't required, and the board actually, since this isn't an action item, a motion wouldn't be made at this time, but you can direct staff to place this on a future agenda. A motion isn't needed.
I would like to direct the staff. I'm getting good at these motions, you guys.
Yes, you are.
Putting my practice in. All right. Let's see. Where are we at? I think we're... there was one last thing that I wanted to bring up regarding future massage board agendas. So I know that last Friday in our second board orientation, we had discussed the desire for more information on human trafficking statistics and licensed versus unlicensed massage therapists. I would like to know if the board would be interested in creating a subcommittee board to address this particular subject. If so, if any of the current board members would be interested in piloting that subcommittee. I believe that the goal would be to provide statistics and research, and in turn, helping educate the public a bit more on issues that obviously a lot of people don't know about. Ms. Moon?
I would be happy to champion that task force or whatever is needed to issue a report or to provide guidance within our board work.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Narros, I'm going to go to you next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that because forming a subcommittee was not agendized for the board's consideration today, what the board can do is ask that staff put this on as a discussion topic for its next meeting at this time.
Absolutely. I would like to instruct the staff and ask the staff kindly to put this topic on the discussion for a future board meeting regarding forming a subcommittee based on human trafficking. And Ms. Lucchese, you have your hand up.
I agree. It's a really important subject, and I think there's a few of us board members that are extremely passionate about trafficking and do this as a day-to-day job, so definitely would be highly interested in discussing that further.
Wonderful.
Well, I think based on our current board members, I thought it would also be a good idea, which is why I wanted to present it. So thank you for chiming in on that. And we can discuss that further at the next board meeting agenda. Are there any other points of discussion that the board members would like to add to today's meeting? Ms. Cisneros, do you have anything that I've missed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the board, the only thing I would like to point out is the minutes from this month will all end up on the next board meeting agenda, too, for the board to consider and review. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And I did miss that on the agenda. I got excited and moved too quickly. So thank you for that. Ms. Moon, you have your hand up.
Yeah, is there any conversation with staff around the date of our next meeting, which it's landing on Thanksgiving week? I'll do my best, but I know that a lot of people are either traveling or just focused on the holidays.
So our next board meeting is scheduled for now at Monday, November 22nd, 2021 at 9 a.m. Mrs. Narrows, Mr. Ogerton, do you have any feedback on that?
Madam Chair, the board can always elect a different date than what is posted. Typically, it's always been the last Monday of the month, but because of the holiday, the Monday was chosen prior to as opposed to thereafter. But either the 22nd or 1 week later are both acceptable in terms of having materials prepared. If there is a preference of the board to not meet the Monday of the holiday, but meet the following Monday and you promise to be there, then we can make that change. We publicly post all these meetings months in advance, but people will know there is a November meeting. So if you prefer a different date, we can make that change.
Okay. I personally am good with Monday, the 22nd. I've already rearranged my schedule for it. So, but it's not all about me. So.
Madam Chair, board members, if someone wants to attend remotely, you're doing that currently anyway. So if there's palm trees in the background, Board Member Moon, you're entitled to still participate.
There will not be palm trees, but I will probably be calling in instead of Zooming in. Thank you.
Ms. Lucchese, you have your hand up.
I prefer to keep it on the 22nd. I myself have rearranged things as well.
Thank you. All right. Are there any other items for discussion before we end this meeting? There are none. It is currently 10:57 on Monday, October 25th, 2021, and this meeting is adjourned.